But when someone messes with my wife and with my kids, that really makes me angry. And we'll talk a little bit more about my issues a little bit later. But we're in the middle of a series all about enemies of the heart. And today we're going to be looking a little bit at anger. Now, if you've been here the last couple of weeks, you'll know that we've already looked at a couple of enemies that we can have in our hearts. And really, these are different things, different emotions that really they infect our heart. They get into who we are, and it hurts us. It hurts our hearts, and it hurts our relationships, really. And that obviously filters down to our relationship with God. And obviously filters down to our relationship with people. And the first one we looked at was obviously guilt. And, you know, guilt is this sort of the sense of feeling indebted to someone. This feeling of, boy, you know what? I owe you something. I've hurt you, whether you know it or not. And because of that, because I owe you, I feel guilty. There's distance. And so, you know, I avoid you and all kinds of things go on there. And we looked at how do we work through that? How do we overcome the guilt that we feel? And some of the things we looked at were things like confession, making restitution. If you missed that, the CDs certainly are available. And I thought it was a great class. Vanna preached it, so I'm allowed to say that. But then last week we looked at what I found was, for me personally, even more challenging. We looked at greed. Now, sort of guilt is a sense of I owe you. Greed is a sense of I owe me. And what happens when greed gets into our hearts is that we feel like, boy, you know what? I owe myself more than what I need. Or I owe myself more than what I have. And because of that, it holds us back from being generous. It holds us back from being kind. And really, no one likes a greedy person. Well, today, anger, this is another one of those enemies. And it is an emotion that really causes a huge amount of damage, and it causes a huge amount of harm. And it's an issue that, as you read through the Bible, comes up just throughout the scriptures, from the very beginning all the way to the end. We're going to have a look at a couple of those, but in Psalm 37, it says, these will come up on the screen, it says, refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret, it leads only to evil. In James chapter 1, it says, a man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. In Job 18, verse 4, it talks about it when you tear yourself to pieces in your anger. Such a great description of what anger can really do to us. Jesus himself was exceptionally serious when he spoke about the emotion of anger. And he said in Matthew 5, he says, you've heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. You know, there was a recently divorced woman, and she was walking along the beach one day, and she was fuming. They just sort of settled the divorce, and she really felt like she got cheated out of, you know, out of money and out of sort of, you know, the divorce settlement. And she was walking, and she was fuming, she was gnashing her teeth, she had white knuckles, she was thinking all kinds of bad things about her ex-husband. And as she walked along, she saw a lamp. And so she picked the lamp up, and she rubbed it, and poof, out popped a genie. And the genie kind of, you know, looked her up and down and saw that she was a little upset. And so I said, hey, you know, you're obviously looking a little bit upset. And she explained her sad story to the genie. And the genie said, hey, well, here's two things. First of all, you rubbed the lamp, so I got to give you three wishes. However, I don't really believe in divorce. And so how it's going to work is whatever you wish for, I'm going to give 10 times that to your ex-husband. So she sort of, you know, she's so overwhelmed by the experience and she's so excited. She says, oh man, you know what? I'm so cash strapped because of this divorce. I would like 10 million rand, please. And no sooner does she say it, does she get an SMS. Beep, beep. And she looks at her phone and it's an SMS from FNB. And it said that 10 million rand has just been deposited into her account. And I mean, her phone doesn't even hold all the zeros. I mean, she's just blown away. But then the genie reminds her, listen, just to remind you that your ex-husband just received a similar SMS, except for 100 billion rand. And so she's like, man, that just ticks her off. She's just, you know, this is just not how she wants things to work out. So she thinks, okay, well, listen, he can have the money, but I'm going to get the kids. So she says, listen, genie, I know the kids would love a beach house. Can we please just have can I have a huge beach mansion with all kinds of things that the kids would enjoy? And all of a sudden, boom, just down the beach, there was this huge mansion. And she was so excited. She thought the kids are going to love coming. They're going to want to spend all the time with me and not with him. The genie said, listen, just to remind you, obviously, from our deal earlier, your husband, your ex-husband, we've unfortunately, for you, I had to give him a whole island. And she's like, oh my goodness, I mean, how on earth do I compete with an island? I mean, the kids, they're going to want to go to the island. Who's going to want to go to the mansion if they can go to the island? So she thinks about it a little bit, and the genie is getting a bit impatient. And he says, okay, you've got one wish left. And the woman thinks to herself, and she says, you know what? I would love to give birth to twins. You know, anger can make you a little nasty, can't it? Now, just for a second, just get some of those images out of your head there. But you know, if guilt is saying that I owe you, and greed is saying that I owe me, what anger is saying is that you owe me. And it doesn't always sort of, it's not always that intuitive if you think about sort of, you know, I'm angry and why am I angry? But if you think about it, the reasons why we get angry is because we feel that we deserve something, or we want something, or we wanted something that we didn't get. And because of that debt that we feel like we're owed, we get angry. And it gets into our hearts. And it never ceases to amaze me. As cute as my kids, I think my kids are, man, they can take me to the edge. They can take me right to the edge, places that I never knew even existed in my own heart. I mean, the amount of times over the last 3 years where sort of, you know, Maura's had to, you know, say, you know, just hand me the baby. And she can just see that, you know, James is sort of, you know, his sort of patience is gone. And just sort of, you know, why don't you go and lie down for a few minutes? Why don't you just go, take a walk? It is amazing how so little, and yet they can push so many of my buttons. But as I think about those different scenarios, it's a sense of, boy, you know what? I deserve more sleep than this. Or I want more free time than I'm getting. Or I feel like you should pay me more respect since you are 2 years old and I'm a little bit older than you. As I narrow it down, that's why I get angry. I get angry because I'm not getting what I want or what I feel like I deserve. And as you and I both know, that anger can obviously go a lot deeper than some of our sort of petty frustrations. That some of us, and you know, think about it. Think about maybe you're feeling angry right now. Maybe you felt anger before, or a real sense of frustration, or feelings of just sort of tossing and turning in your bed, worrying or thinking about someone or a certain situation. Well, think about that situation, whatever it is for you, and think about how you can reduce it to this idea that you wanted something and you felt like you deserved possibly something but it was taken away from you. And, in preparing to talk about anger, I thought about different angry people that I'd known through my life and through the years. And certainly one that came to mind was a friend of mine from primary school. We must have been friends when I was about 10 or 11. We were great friends. We had a lot in common. But he certainly had an angry edge to him. And, as I reflect on our friendship now, I think of certain situations that most probably contributed to that. I remember once I was spending the night at his house, and we were sitting playing Nintendo. Now, I don't know if any of you guys remember that Nintendo Entertainment System, that box. Did any of you ever have the box, the Nintendo box? Okay, either you're too old or you're too young, okay? But that was sort of one of the first sort of, really, really popular, everyone had to have computer games. And I remember we were sitting playing Mario Brothers, and all of a sudden, there was some shuffling that happened through the door. It was late at night, and, my friend's mom rushed in and said, "Listen, shh, Dad's home, and he's drunk." And so my friend says to me, and listen, we're 10, 11 years old. He says, "Listen, just don't look at him." I'm like, "Don't look at him." "Yeah, just, if he, just nod and say yes or no if he asks you something." Now, I'm sitting there just in the couch, just staring at Mario, just pushing buttons. And my heart's like, I have no idea what's about to come through the door. My dad, I never saw my dad drunk. I mean, it was just an intense experience. And he kind of sort of walked into the door and ding, 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 ding. And, there was just sort of a brief, exchange. And eventually, my friend's mom got him into the kitchen, locked him in the kitchen. Now, if someone needs to be locked away against their will, there's most probably not good things going on. And as I reflect now on my angry friend and that edge that he had, it helps me understand, He had something taken away from him. Certainly, I'm sure he would have felt that in the years following. He had an emotionally absent father. He had a father who would come home and be drunk, and goodness knows what would happen during those times. And boy, if you grow up experiencing those things, then you grow up certainly feeling as a young child that you are owed something. And if you had to verbalize those different feelings that you feel, and we so often don't actually say the words, do we? But if you had to verbalize some of the things that maybe you feel about people or about situations, it might sound something a little like this. "You took my reputation at work. That email that you sent, that comment that you made in the meeting, you hurt my reputation. You owe me." Maybe feelings of, "Boy, you stole my marriage. We're still married, but I feel like you stole something. You've taken from me. Maybe you robbed me of a dream. Maybe it's because of you I didn't get to do something. You destroyed the best years of my life. You took away from me. You took an opportunity away. You took away my chance at being normal, or what I think is normal. I deserved you to listen to me properly. I deserved you to hear what I had to say and to take what I had to say more seriously." You know what? If you show me an angry person, I'll show you a hurt person. Someone who's been hurt. I mean, the teens, if you think of bullies at school, and maybe you are the bully, but usually, and you only sort of work this out later, because bullies often come across so confident, so often the bully at school is the one who's hurting the most, is the one who's got the most problems and the most things to deal with. I know often, certainly in a country like ours, things like racism and racial tension, that there is so often, and you see it with people who either are explicitly racial in their conversations, or maybe they talk, excessively about, these, white people, or these colored people, or these black people. Boy, but if you narrow it down, you'll see that they are hurting in some way. there is a sense of something has been taken away from me, justified or not. And because of that, I feel owed and I'm angry. And what we'll look at just now, and this is the tragedy, is that the person that took away from us, or the debt that's owed to us, so often impossible to pay it back, even if they wanted to. I mean, how does a father pay back his 25-year-old, his 30-year-old son or daughter for not being there when they were 10? How do you pay that back? You can't, can you? How do you pay back centuries of politics and of racial tension and of bad decisions? How do you pay back 100 years? You can't. How do you even pay back one day of history? You can't pay it back, can you? And therein lies the tragedy of anger. We feel like we're owed something, but that which we are owed, we can never, ever get it back. Your parents, your boss, your kids, the church, society, whatever it is, how do you undo it? And what happens is, just because you can't get repaid, it doesn't stop it from infesting our hearts, does it? That you may know that you can't turn back the hands of time, but you still get angry. You still have those feelings in your heart about things that were done to you, maybe a few days ago, maybe a few weeks, maybe many years. I've certainly been there before. And what happens is, as it infests your heart, you forget about the fact that there is one person that possibly owes you. And you start to believe that actually everybody owes you. It filters into your being. It filters into who you are. And I've certainly been down that road before. Situations where maybe someone has assumed the worst of me. I don't know if you've been there before. They've thought something bad of you, and I don't feel like it's a justified thought. Maybe parts of it are justified, but not all of it. And I feel a little bit like, boy, you know what? You owe me for thinking that. That's not a pleasant thing to think. And I feel angry. I feel frustrated inside. But you know what? I arrive home with those feelings, and my wife wants to sit down and say, hey, so how was your day? Fine. Well, let me talk about my day then. Blah, blah, blah. Listen, you know, can we just watch the news? I don't really feel like talking. And I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling frustrated about something. But who tends to start paying the price? It's the kids running up and saying, hey, you know, Dad, can we play? Sure, you know, go and play. I'll watch you. No, that's not what I meant. You know, go and play. I'll watch you. You know, here's a lollipop or something. It's fascinating how, as much as we want to protect the people that we really do love, they are the ones that end up paying the price for the anger in our heart. It's the same with our church. It's the same with anyone that we're close to. So easy for them to pay the price. And we can think that we can protect those that we love, but you know what? An angry heart is a heart that's looking to be repaid. And because the debtor is usually long gone, or not in your immediate circle, the price gets paid by someone else. You know, I read a story, fascinating, horrible, of a man who killed his own four daughters because the oldest daughter married someone that he didn't agree with. And as I saw the headline and as I read on, I thought, well, he must have had something wrong in his head. There must have been, you know, something else there. But there wasn't. He was just angry. And as I read more and more of these stories, trying to understand anger, and these children, most of them, the one was older and about to get married, most of them were in primary school. And as I read these stories, trying to understand, is it because they're psychotic? I realized it's not. It's because they're angry. Read of a story of a dad who had recently been separated from his wife, and the daughter, 5 years old, went home to the mum instead of where she was supposed to go, to his house. He beat her to death in a fit of rage. beat her and beat her. And eventually she was taken to the hospital and she died in the hospital because he was angry. Because he was angry. Anger is a sick, sick thing. And you know what? Anger looks very different from person to person. Some of us, we're very openly angry. And boy, every now and again, you know, our fuse gets lit and boy, there's an explosion in the house. And it's very obvious. But others, our anger is displayed differently. It's maybe a cold shoulder, isn't it? You're sort of angry with someone. So you don't shout at them. Rah! But you just kind of avoid them at church. Or you sort of see them in the shopping mall. And you're like, man, you know, okay, they're going down that aisle. Let me go down that aisle. And boy, you know, sometimes you can't help it. Hi, how are you? Oh, look, I really need a rush. But, you know, I'll see you later. It's that cold shoulder. If you're like me, you can disguise your anger quite well. And that's really one of my struggles. That boy, I'm angry, but I keep it inside. And inside, I'm churning and I'm wrestling and I'm having conversations with myself. Man, you know, when I see them, I'm going to tell them how I feel. And blah, blah, blah. And then when I see them, hi. And I think, you know, I'll tell them, but I'll just wait for a better opportunity. It's just how my anger, you know, exposes itself. I've certainly seen it on Facebook. I don't know if you have. Amazing how one comment can say 1,000 words about what's going on in your heart. And you know what? At some point, we need to decide, no matter how big or how small our anger is, we need to decide to take steps towards letting things go. But how do we do that? Well, here are two things that I hope will help you take steps towards dealing with anger if you do have some in your heart this morning. The one is you got to admit that you're angry. And the second one is you need to cancel the debt. Okay? But let's start with admitting that you're angry. Have a look in Ephesians chapter 4 with me here. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31. Before we read there, we all have a story, don't we? We all have a story of whether it be a hurt. We've all got a story of neglect, possibly. Maybe it's a story of abuse. And so often those stories are painful. And it's pain that goes back sometimes many, many, many years. And that story is, you know, it makes up who we are. It's our story. Well, we can only restore our hearts if we're first of all able to tell our story and work out from that story exactly what is owed to us and who owes us that debt. And we won't properly be able to deal with our past. Properly deal. I'm not talking about sweep it under the carpet. Properly deal with our past. Unless we're able to say, this is who hurt me. And this is exactly what they took from me. See, as a conflict avoider, I'm a general forgiver. You know, it's like, hey, you know what, I'm feeling, but you know what, amen, I forgive everyone, I'm a forgiving person, you know, that doesn't help me deal with my anger. I need to work out who owes me and exactly what they took from me, exactly what they owe me. And you know what, for some of us, it's hard to admit that because we don't always understand that we're angry. We use other words. Oh, I'm frustrated. Oh, I've got an attitude. All these nice, pretty words. But you know what? It's because we're angry. And we need to be able to admit it. In verse 31, it says, get rid of all bitterness, rage and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. You know, anger displays itself in all kinds of ways. And I know, often if you ask someone, are you an angry person? what comes into their mind is, you know, am I a person who, you know, face goes red and, you know, has a short fuse and kicks the door and screams out of the window when, you know, when someone cuts in front of you in traffic? We have this picture that that is what anger is. And if that's what anger is, then no, I'm not an angry person. I'm not like that at all. Or I'm sometimes like that, but it certainly doesn't describe who I am. But anger's definition is certainly a lot deeper than that. Paul here talks about all bitterness. You know what bitterness is? Bitterness is just anger on the inside. Anger on the inside. Talks about rage, brawling. Oh, you know, I'm not talking to so-and-so. We're having a fight. Well, where do you think that fight comes from? It's from anger. Slander. Interesting how it includes slander into this. Saying bad things about other people. Oh, I'm not angry with her. She's just a cow. You're really not angry? Oh, please. And we need to understand that when we talk about people negatively behind their back, it's because we're angry. It's because we're angry with them. Why would you want to hurt someone that you're not angry with? Talks about every form of malice. Every form of you feeling ill will towards someone else. Paul says, get rid of all of it. You know, there's a card that I think some of us carry around in our wallets and in our purses and in our pockets. And it's a card that looks a little bit something like this. It's called a victim membership card. And you keep it in your wallet because you only want to pull it out at opportune times. Kind of like a Pick and Pay Smart Shoppers card. You never use it. You don't look at it. You don't hang it on your mantelpiece. But boy, as you get to the till and they say, you know, hand over the cash, you're like, woo, you know, I've got my Smart Shoppers card. Well, that's what the victim card's kind of like. And the amazing thing about this card is if you own one of these, you can justify almost any behavior, no matter how sinful it is. That, you're feeling something, you're acting out of something. Oh, the reason I'm feeling this way is because of my parents and how they brought me up. Oh, I'm so this and that and so, it's because of the church. Oh boy, you know what? I wouldn't be this way if it wasn't for my wife or my husband. That this card has an amazing ability to prevent us from dealing with what's really going on in our hearts. And you know what? As long as we keep this card with us, we have no incentive to really change, do we? We have no incentive to change. Because you know what? While we have this card, we actually believe our justifications. We believe them. And boy, you know what? If you've been playing the victim card, instead of taking responsibility for your own behavior, I want to encourage you. You got to get rid of it. You got to crumple it up. You need to cut it into two. You need to acknowledge and you need to get rid of it. And you know what? I appreciate so many of you in this church. One thing that I love being a disciple and knowing so many wonderful people is I know so many of your stories. And so many of you, you had really tough stories, really difficult. Really difficult times. And yet, you know what blows me away? Is that you come to church and you come into our homes and you come into small group and you love and you serve and you just let your light shine. And you know what? If anyone is a hero, I think it's you. I think it's those of you who, in spite of all the reasons, far more reasons than I have to ever pull out my own victim card, in spite of all those reasons, you choose not to, and you choose to love. I just think that that's inspiring. First of all, we need to admit. Second of all, we need to cancel the debt. We need to let it go. I'm going to read Ephesians 4, verse 31 and 32. It says, get rid of, not get rid of it, unless, of course, you have a good reason. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ forgave you. What's Paul saying? Cancel the debt. That is the remedy for anger, isn't it? Forgive. Forgive. But wait, let me just... Forgive. Cancel the debt. And Paul says, just as Christ forgave you, forgive. And that's the power right there, isn't it? That just to forgive someone, just to cancel the debt on its own, I don't know about you, but it goes so against any sense of justice that I have in my heart. It's kind of like, boy, you took from me. Now, if you just repay me, then we'll call it even. And that's kind of, you know, I mean, the bank doesn't just cancel my debt. So why should I cancel your debt? On its own, just canceling debts doesn't make sense. But if you understand just how many of your own debts have been canceled through your relationship with Jesus, boy, that's where the power lies right there, isn't it? That we need to understand that holy transaction in order to be able to truly forgive. And I think, you know, Matthew 18, the parable of the unmerciful servant is such a great example of that perspective. And it just shows you that heart of, boy, the servant who owed the king. And the king wrote off so much debt, more than he could ever repay. And the guy's just blown away and he's so happy. And yet his own servant owes him some bucks. And instead of passing on that love and forgiveness that he has experienced, what does he do? He says, no. I'm not letting go until you repay everything. Throws his family in prison. And boy, Jesus speaks very seriously about that. That boy, we need to have a divine perspective on our own lives before we go down the road of holding everyone that we meet and everyone that hurts us to the debts that we feel like they owe. And you know what? It eats us up. It really eats us up. And you know, if you're really struggling with anger, if you're really struggling to forgive, I want to encourage you. You got to get some help with it. If you haven't been able to deal with it by now, maybe it's time to talk. There's some great resources. I can certainly, if you have those kind of issues, come to me. I can point you in a direction. There are a number of people trained in this church to be able to help talk you through forgiveness and anger. And I want to encourage you. If you haven't been able to deal with it, you got to deal with it. And here's the struggle for me. Is when you cancel the debt, you need to commit yourself not to reopen the case later. Isn't it funny how our feelings don't necessarily follow our decisions so quickly? I mean, it would be nice to forgive and forget. It would be wonderful. But it doesn't work that way. And I've had that situation where, you know, I've prayed and I've made a decision. Okay, you know, amen, I'm canceling the debt. I'm not going to hold it against them. I process it. I think about my own debts. And I'm feeling good. And then all of a sudden, you see them again. And you see them smiling at church. And all of a sudden, you're like, why are they smiling? What have they got so much to be happy about? Do they know how much, you know, pain they put me through? And it's just so easy. And I think it's normal for those feelings to come flooding back in. I mean, memories are not bad things. They're normal things. They make life worth living. And it's okay, I think, if we have those struggles. But it's at that point that we need to decide, you know what? And maybe you even need to say it to yourself. You know what? They don't owe me anything. I have canceled my debt with them. And I love how Jesus throws us into the Lord's Prayer. He throws it in Matthew 6, verse 12 on the screen. As part of his teaching on prayer, forgive us our debts as we have also forgiven our debtors. They're really canceling those debts. It's not just a once off. It's a daily decision, isn't it? It's a daily decision to say, boy, you know what? This is still a struggle. I'm still raw in my heart. But you know what? I've canceled that debt and I'm going to love. I'm going to love. And you know what? You keep doing that. Over time, I believe your feelings will change. I know many of you who have been hurt, I know that your feelings have changed over the years. And I think it's wonderful to see it. And so to close out here, church, I want to remind us all of something. I think sometimes we can expect others to be Superman. And we can kind of expect of our parents, our ancestors, you know, our own families, people in the church, we can kind of expect that from them. And you know what? God has a very different perspective on us. You know what God has to say about us? God says that we are but made of dust. And so while we so easily sit there looking and expecting Superman, God's looking at us and he's expecting and he knows that each one of us, we are but dust. And you know, those that have hurt you, whoever they are, there is a good chance that they have hurt you because they themselves are hurting. We looked at it before, how hurt people hurt people. And I know that some of your hurts are unimaginable. And we must never diminish our story. And we must never diminish the story of each other. That our stories are real and they're painful. But you know what? Forgiveness is not for them. Forgiveness is for you. Forgiveness is for you. So that you may be healed. And so, church, let us be a people who cancel our debts. And let us be a people who walk free of anger. Amen. Why don't we say a word of prayer?